Overnight Low, 75.
Welcome to another edition of Hey Doc. I'm Dr. Harold Lasky, medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center, right here in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm your host for the next half hour. With me today is my co-host and wife, Carmen Lasky, a certified EMT. Together, we hope that you will find the show informative, educational, as well as entertaining. I think this is the 17th week in a row that the coronavirus has been in the forefront of our daily news and presented here on the Hey Doc Show.
It started out being called the novel coronavirus only because the word novel in this instance simply means new, and it was the new virus on the block.
The virus is now named SARS-CoV-2, which is a coronavirus simply because the virus particle looks like a crown, or corona in Latin, that causes coronavirus disease 2019, or as we call it, COVID-19. Remember that it is not the coronavirus, but one of many. They are really a family of viruses that target and affect mammals' respiratory systems. As scientists, well, they like to categorize things. The coronaviruses are no exception, and are divided according to their specific characteristics into four main ranks or genera of coronavirus called Alpha, Beta, Delta, and Gamma, the first four letters of the Latin alphabet.
Most of these coronaviruses affect animals, but a few can also pass to humans. Those that are transmissible to humans belong to only two of these genera, Alpha and Beta.
I'm sure you've heard us using the term viruses or coronaviruses as the plural for virus and coronavirus. You may have been thinking, Dr. Lasky, that's a faux pas. The plural of virus is viri, isn't it? Well, no, it ain't. The reason that it is not the plural is because the word virus does not come from Latin. So whereas the plural of crisis is crises, the plural of virus is viruses.
There have most likely been other coronavirus outbreaks years and years ago, but only two coronaviruses have previously caused global outbreaks.
The first of these was the SARS coronavirus, with the letters standing for Severe Acute Respiratory Syndrome. It seems to have started sometime in 2002 in China. Next was the MERS coronavirus, responsible for Middle Eastern Respiratory Syndrome, which started in Saudi Arabia 10 years later in 2012. The SARS coronavirus spread to humans via civet cats, while the MERS virus spread via camels or dromedaries. However, it can be difficult to determine the animal form from which a coronavirus starts spreading among humans.
Even though the seafood market in central Wuhan, China, was thought to have been the single source of the present pandemic, later assessments have suggested that this market was unlikely to be the single source of the coronavirus outbreak.
And many specialists are divided as to the actual cause or the single true source of the virus. Well, that kind of information helps researchers, and in the end will probably help to determine a cause and prevention for future pandemics. Most of us really want to know only two things: how can we prevent it and how can we treat it?
Although initially the cause may have been another mammal giving it to human, there is now person-to-person transmission.
The same study shows that the new virus's DNA is about 79% the same as that of the SARS coronavirus and approximately 50% the same as that of the MERS virus.
Over the past months, the symptoms of the coronavirus have been pretty much drilled into everyone.
Not only are scientists and physicians listing the signs and symptoms of the disease, but the media as well is putting it on the morning, noon, afternoon, evening, and nightly news channels.
These include cough, shortness of breath, fatigue, headache, congestion, runny nose, fever, chills, muscle pain, sore throat, loss of taste or smell, nausea or vomiting, and diarrhea.
Most of these are not much different than common colds and other common maladies.
A study published in the Lancet reports that around 80% of people with COVID-19 have mild symptoms and do not require hospitalization.
Therefore, somewhere around 20% appear to progress to more severe disease, including pneumonia, respiratory failure, and in some cases, death. Initially, the disease was known as a public health emergency, but later changed on March 11, 2020, to be called a pandemic. The word has really been bandied about a lot and has quite a specific meaning.
In fact, there are really several terms that can often be confused here. These include epidemic, pandemic, and endemic.
So to make you experts on the terms, Carmen and I are going to give you some on-point definitions so that you can explain to your friends and family just what the actual differences are.
An epidemic is a disease that affects a large number of people within a community, population, or region.
A pandemic, on the other hand, is an epidemic that's spread over multiple countries or continents. And something that is endemic is something that belongs to a particular people or country.
An outbreak is a greater than anticipated increase in the number of endemic cases. It can also be a single case in a new area.
If it's not quickly controlled, an outbreak can become an epidemic. But what's the difference between epidemic and endemic? An epidemic is actively spreading. New cases of the disease substantially exceed what is expected.
An epidemic is often localized by region, but the number of those infected in that region is significantly higher than normal.
For example, when COVID-19 was limited to Wuhan, China, it was an epidemic. The geographical spread turned it into a pandemic.
Endemics, on the other hand, are a constant presence in a specific location.
Now, malaria is considered to be endemic to parts of Africa, and you could say that, well, ice is endemic to Antarctica.
We can further talk about an outbreak as when something that is endemic leads to an outbreak, which can happen anywhere.
Last summer, there was an outbreak of dengue fever in Hawaii. Dengue fever is endemic to certain regions of Africa, Central and South America, and the Caribbean. By the way, if you're from the United Kingdom, you would pronounce it dengue, while here in the United States, we say dengue.
Mosquitoes transmit it from person to person, but in 2019, there was an outbreak of dengue fever in Hawaii, where the disease is not endemic.
It's believed an infected person visited the Big Island and was bitten by mosquitoes there. The insects then transferred the disease to other individuals that they bit, which created the outbreak. I hope that you can see why so many people confuse these terms, but now you too can explain them just like an expert.
At this point in time, with the mortality rates of varying from country to country, it appears that at least in the U.S., the fatality rate is around 6%.
It's important to remember that with MERS, we know that approximately 35% of reported patients with the MERS coronavirus infection have died.
And the fatality rate of SARS ranges from 0 to 50% depending on the age group affected, with an overall estimate of case fatality of 14 to 15%.
And SARS is, well, it's no longer considered a risk. The WHO reported that since 2003, there have only been a few cases of the disease resulting from laboratory accidents or possibly transmission from animals.
According to research, SARS-CoV-2 seems to be more infectious than other coronaviruses, such as those that cause SARS and MERS, but less likely to lead to death.
This is a great time to tell you about Southside Medical Center.
I'm Dr. Harold Lasky,
and I've been the medical director and physician at Southside Medical Center for the past 33 years.
We're located at 3604 Southside Boulevard, just two blocks south of the Beach Boulevard intersection between the Pottsburg Post Office and the Tulsa Welding School. We will treat your pains, sprains, and strains. Our practice emphasizes chronic pain management as well as anti-aging medicine. We also have an office-based substance treatment program for those who need it. Southside Medical Center is open 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday. If you would like to make an appointment or ask any questions about Southside Medical Center, please call us at 641-4411. That's 641-4411. Southside Medical Center, where your health is our primary care. Welcome back to the Hey Doc Show. On May 15th, the WHO released a commentary about a health issue known as multisystem inflammatory condition, which has recently been reported in children and adolescents and which may have links with COVID-19. Although no published scientific reports have investigated the susceptibility of pregnant women to COVID-19, the CDC noticed that
pregnant women seem to have had a high risk of severe illness when infected with virus from the same family as SARS-CoV-2 and other viral respiratory infections.
And although this should go without saying, the use of face masks only works if the nose and mouth are both covered by the mask, and it should be secure to the face.
They should include multiple layers of fabric but still allow for unrestricted breathing. After removing the mask for any reason, you should immediately wash your hands. But they said it's your choice whether you use a mask or not.
I remember a big problem that people were having in the past when they cooked chicken and then sliced or cut it apart on the same cutting board that they cut the raw chicken on initially. The same germs that remained on the chicken re-inhabited the cooked chicken, and many people got sick. You know, the same goes for masks. Masks help prevent transmission. This most likely means that any viruses in the air or breath that contacts the mask remain on the mask. Once we touch the mask to remove it, perhaps to change masks, we've already touched the masks.
That is why it is really important to wash hands for at least 20 seconds after touching, removing, or placing the mask on your face.
And those cloth face coverings, they need to be washed regularly in the washing machine.
There are what appears to be successful research using the drug remdesivir in the case of the novel coronavirus.
However, it has not yet been approved unconditionally and therefore has not been mentioned by the FDA as an accepted cure or even a treatment choice against the disease.
There is limited information about the safety and effectiveness of remdesivir for COVID-19. But a recent trial suggests that it can shorten the recovery time in some people.
Clinical trials are underway not only to find one or more treatments for the disease, but a vaccine as well to prevent the disease.
We have all been hopeful that we will have one by September of this year, but researchers are more hopeful that we will have something by early 2021.
We have all, I am sure, been hopeful early on, and the pandemic that the drugs hydroxychloroquine and chloroquine would prove successful in the treatment of COVID-19. However, the latest research is not very positive, and the FDA has actually issued a statement that it believes that these drugs are not likely to be an effective treatment for COVID-19, and that the risks of using them for this purpose might outweigh any benefits. Now, there's also research being done using an arthritis drug named baricitinib.
Researchers say that baricitinib may be able to disrupt the interaction between the virus and some key receptors on the surface of some lung cells, which are also present on some kidney, blood vessels, and heart cells as well.
The most recent medication in the news is dexamethasone, when scientists in Britain announced a major breakthrough in the battle against the coronavirus just last week. Now, this drug, dexamethasone, is a cheap, widely available steroid, which, according to the British researchers, seems to help patients in dire straits. But they added that it also may be risky for patients with milder illness.
After the announcement last week, officials at some U.S. hospitals said that they would begin to treat coronavirus patients with dexamethasone, and the World Health Organization called for accelerating production to ensure an adequate supply.
The U.K. health officials then moved to limit exports of the steroid.
The drug was tested in a clinical trial that includes some 6,425 patients in Britain. One there were randomly assigned to receive the drug, while the others received the usual care. Patients in the first group received a very low dose of the drug, given daily for up to 10 days.
Dexamethasone was beneficial for those who had been sick for more than a week, reducing deaths by one-third among patients on mechanical ventilators and by one-fifth among patients receiving supplemental oxygen by other means.
Patients given the steroid who were not receiving respiratory support, however, actually died at a slightly higher rate than similar patients who were not given the drug, although the difference was not statistically significant.
According to Dr. Martin J. Landry, the drug might have disparate effects at different stages of the disease. Now, this does make sense given the biology of the illness.
In the most severely ill patients, the immune system flies into a harmful overdrive mode, triggering a so-called cytokine storm that damages the body, including the lungs.
Landry said that it's almost like a disease with two phases. A phase where the virus dominates, and then the immunological phase, where the damage to the immune system is the most dominant.
Doctors have worried about using steroids such as dexamethasone to fight COVID-19 because steroids are anti-inflammatory drugs that dampen the body's protective immune response. Landry said that in mildly ill patients, it may do more harm than good.
All of this seems to be just like, well, the next bad joke. It goes something like this. Unfortunately, a man fell out of an airplane.
Fortunately, there was a haystack below him.
Unfortunately, there was a pitchfork in the haystack.
Fortunately, he missed the pitchfork.
Unfortunately, he missed the haystack.
And unfortunately, that is the way it seems to go with coronavirus cures.
Remember that in the early phase of the illness, the immune system is your friend, since it begins fighting the virus. However, unfortunately, in the later phase, the immune system is no longer your friend. It's responsible for the lungs failing, and dampening it down with steroids helps the situation and improves the chance of survival.
And so at this point, many experts agreed, saying the study showed dexamethasone cannot be used to treat mild illness or as a preventive.
Therefore, it has been recommended that patients with mild infections should not be trying to get their physicians to prescribe them dexamethasone just in case. And remember COVID toe? That was the sign of the darkened areas on the toes that were thought to have been an early sign of infection with the COVID-19 infection.
Well, it turns out that two new studies strongly suggest that the so-called COVID toe lesions that have popped up among some Americans during the pandemic may not be caused by infection with the new coronavirus after all.
Ha! Despite intensive testing over a wide time period, none of the 51 study patients afflicted with the red and tender toes came up with positive for SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19.
Instead, the researchers suggested that the simple fact that many people are spending weeks on end walking around barefoot at home might be the cause.
The Spanish researchers behind one of the studies now theorizes that those skin lesions were really not induced by the virus at all, but by the quarantine state itself. Apparently, the research showed that the condition appeared mainly in children isolated in houses that were not well suited for individuals who spent long periods barefoot or only wearing socks and with very little physical activity. Now, here's a surprising one. Contrary to what most of us presumed concerning an increase in births after all the quarantine time couples would spend together during the pandemic, the new research demonstrates that the coronavirus pandemic could lead to 300,000 to up to 500,000 fewer births than expected in the United States. Huh?
What researchers did was look at studies of fertility during the 1918 flu pandemic and the 2007-2009 recession and considered current factors such as physical distancing, job losses, and other economic uncertainties and anxiety.
The U.S. fertility rate actually dropped 10% after the 1918 flu pandemic. March of Dimes researchers analyzed similar data and found the same results. There could be a drop in 10, 15, or even 20% in the next few years. The economic and demographic implications that stem from a severe drop in pregnancies could have a tremendous impact on the next generation, which really makes this a pretty serious issue. During the Great Recession, U.S. births dropped from 69 births per 1,000 women in 2007 to 63 births per 1,000 women in 2012. That 9% drop equals about 400,000 fewer births. States with more severe recessions had a larger drop.
The circumstances in which we now find ourselves could be and are even more likely to be long-lasting, leading to a permanent loss of income for many people.
So, contrary to the popular belief that the current pandemic would cause a baby boom, we could have a decrease in births over time. It seems that increased births occur more after short-term weather events rather than catastrophic losses.
Basically, the bottom line is this. When there is a storm warning, there is some data that suggests that the rate of pregnancies increase.
But actually, when destruction happens like a hurricane or tornado, then births go down.
And speaking of reversals, remember that Florida has been stopping those from New York coming into Florida for fear of additional coronavirus attacking our citizens?
Well, now as cases continue to surge throughout the American South and West, some state officials are rethinking their policies. New York may be considering closing its border to Floridians.
And finally, to end this show, let us give you the more recent facts concerning mobility and mortality.
There are more than 8.36 million positive cases around the world, at least 449,000 global deaths, while we've suffered more as a country than any other around the globe, with more than 2.16 million cases and at least 117,717 deaths.
Just one moment. I would like to tell you about one item I just heard about. We all would like a coronavirus test that is less uncomfortable than the one being performed presently using what looks like 2 6-inch long Q-tips chopped up your nose and twisted around for 15 seconds. Some researchers have created a robot that gently touches the Q-tip to the back of the throat where you barely feel it tickle and actually get a better sample for testing for the coronavirus.
I'd like you, our listeners, to know that I am one of several physicians right here in the Jacksonville area that has received the certification to recommend medical marijuana to those patients with certain qualifying diagnoses. For more information, you can call our office at 641-4411. We have also set up a special website at CompassionateCareJax.com where you can get a whole lot more information on medical marijuana. We've come to the end of another Hey Doc show.
So, from all of us here at Southside Medical Center, have a happy and healthy weekend. Goodbye.